Oh, that's right. Good afternoon, everybody. I have one of my favorite political consultants right here with us this afternoon. I have Chad Kinsella from over there at Lander University. He is a professor of political science and just political, I guess, and social sciences over there. How you doing today, Chad?
I am very well, thank you.
You know, before you came down here to South Carolina, you used to work on some political campaigns.
I did. I worked for a congressman, and I worked kind of on some of the state campaigns. So it was a lot of fun.
And that was up there in Ohio.
It was in Northern Kentucky and Ohio. Yes.
Yes. So what do you think about the fact that the Republican convention is going to be right back there in Cleveland?
It's exciting. I was really excited. I thought, you know, that would be a great place to take a class. I was hoping maybe the Democrats would go to Columbus, but it was not to be. But it'll be really interesting that it's in Cleveland, although I'm still kind of surprised that they didn't pick Cincinnati or Columbus, because Cleveland is usually seen as the base for the Democrats in Ohio. But it's a great place. It's a bigger place, probably, for a good place for a convention.
Didn't part of the reason, though, is the fact that they really need Ohio if they're going to run the tables on this election?
There's definitely something to it. They've got to, you know, they've got to, you know, there's a lot of lip service given to Ohio, but you got to, you know, it'll be nice, I think, for, you know, a lot of the local people in Ohio, especially Republicans in Ohio, to have that convention there. And, you know, that hopefully will fire up the base. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Certainly worked for Obama in 2008 when they went to Denver, but, you know, didn't work so well for the Democrats in 2012 with North Carolina, because they went to Charlotte and North Carolina went the other way in 2012. Not that it really mattered ultimately, but I think it'll be helpful. And there are a lot of Republicans. I mean, they are outnumbered by Democrats up in Cuyahoga County, but, you know, I think it'll fire them up, and it'll get, you know, a lot of Republicans in Ohio, you know, excited about whoever's candidacy, one of the 14 or however many we have now running. It'll get them excited again. And yes, Ohio is the swingiest of swing states. So, I mean, that has been the key battleground in the last several presidential elections.
Sure. So I think it's a gutsy move on the Republicans' part to go right into the Democratic area and see if they can swing the state.
It is gutsy, but at the same time, I think one of the key things that Cleveland has, kind of thinking about this from kind of a different perspective, is they have the facilities to that they can host a major convention like that. That Cincinnati, although that's kind of like the hometown, I don't want to knock them too much, but, you know, they probably do not have the same facilities that Cleveland does, and nor does Columbus. So I think that also makes kind of logical, although it's not kind of the home turf for the Republicans. It is in Ohio, and they do have the facilities that can help them pull off a really nice convention.
Well, I think it's very interesting that they had the first debate there, and then they'll be back there. And, of course, I guess we should say the state favorite, Kasich, was right there on the main stage.
Yeah, he was, and there was a very favorable crowd for him. So that was good for him. And he was one of the big winners of that debate. I mean, there were a couple people who didn't fare so well, a couple people who did, but he did fairly well. I mean, it was really interesting. I think they were some of the pundits were comparing, you know, he had talked about he went to a same-sex wedding and you know, same-sex marriage, and you know, which is, I think, back in, what was it, either I think it was in 2008, there, you know, that question, there was somebody asked that from the crowd and was booed, or so, you know, it was kind of a big you know, change, and he answered it very well. He kind of came from the heart a little bit more, so he had a pretty good debate.
Yes, I think he did. And of course he has his creds, where he was, of course, in Congress and was back there when they balanced the budget and this type of thing. And of course, now as governor, he has turned the corner for a lot of aspects. He's got some issues, though, too. Today we are going to be talking politics here, and we would love for you to get involved. If you are on Facebook with us, you can ask a question, make a comment, and I'm going to get my computer here in a second. We'll see if anybody's making any noise on Facebook this afternoon. But we want to hear your comments, because this is just a local discussion right here at WCRS. You know, Rick Perry sure disappointed a lot of people today when he didn't come to Greenwood.
Yes, that was kind of the big news I saw and heard about. So he kind of, the suggestion is that his campaign may be in trouble. They confirmed that his staff is no longer being paid. Super PAC is flush with funds, but apparently his campaign is no longer, paying anyone. So
I think the question is that just the South Carolina team or all across the board for Perry?
That is a big, if that's just, and in South Carolina, I know they're not paying their staff anymore. But again, no offense to South Carolina, the big prizes are still Iowa and New Hampshire, although South Carolina is important. Definitely the first in the South. Although we damaged our kind of reputation with Newt Gingrich in 2012, because I think us in Georgia were the only two states to back him. But we'll see if we can't pick a winner this time.
Absolutely. We certainly picked him in the past.
Yes.
But that was, I thought, even if your campaign was on the ropes, I think it was a poor move on Rick Perry, because he may not know it, but Joanne Burrows and the group of Republicans had anticipated about a 300 people turnout. And I think so often your smaller towns like Greenwood get passed over for the bigger arenas. But you know what? There's a lot of good voters right here in these smaller pockets.
Yes, there are, and really, it's he's feeding the perception that his campaign is in trouble. When you cancel an event like that, people automatically assume he is in trouble.
Sure,
there might have been a very logical reason why he canceled it. I can't think of one, but anyway.
Well, because this had been planned for quite a few weeks. That's the other thing.
Yeah, it has been. It's been out in the news a lot. It has been planned for a while, and the news comes out that he's not paying people, that his campaign is in trouble, that he might jump out, and then he cancels an event like this. It kind of feeds the monster, so to speak. He's kind of following into, if you'd have kept up, with this and done this, it kind of speaks to, it's like, we might have a little bit of money trouble, but, there's a whole lot of other people. I'm fine. I'm still in this. But when you
and
cancel,
can we pass the hat here at the event, please?
Oh, I'm sure there was going to be a hat that was going to go around, or a big one, a big empty one at that, just to. But again, yeah. So there's, and really, when you think about it, I have no idea between now and then, between the when we have the primary here in South Carolina, how many candidates are going to be there, still in it. It's logical to think that some of them will drop out, maybe him. But, if he's really going to compete, it is going to be important to kind of make those connections and kind of, as Bill Clinton would always say, press the flesh and get those people to, interested and involved in your campaign. And so it is a missed opportunity, to be sure. And it does feed this whole idea that his campaign is, in fact, in trouble. So remains to be seen yet if that is really what is going on.
Sure. He is going to be in Anderson. In fact, he has two events in Anderson, one tonight, one tomorrow morning, and then he's going to be over at the Beacon, I think it was at 4 o'clock-ish, over there in Spartanburg. So he is still coming to South Carolina, but they couldn't book a flight that would get him here early enough. Come on, Rick, give us a break here. All right. Well, listen, we're going to be talking about all the candidates here. Who's your favorite? Who would you like to ask a question of? One of the reasons I like sitting down with Chad is he comes from a younger perspective, because he's dealing with students over there at Lander. And even though it's been summer break, I know he's kept in touch, and I know his students love to talk to him about what they're finding out. Some, of course, are probably already working on some of the campaigns. We're going to talk about all that, so why don't you keep it right here on your favorite dial. That's 1450 AM. I'm Ann Eller, and we'll be right back.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash, then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
All right, that's right. I'm Ann Eller right here on WCRS with Chad Kinsella here today. You know, he is a political science professor over there at Lander. Yes, he's shaping young minds. And what a time to be in politics, to be a poli-sci professor with what, just out to go off subject here a little bit, what are you thinking as you look at getting into the next, this coming year for politics, for your classes and everything? This has to be an opportune time as a professor.
You know, it is. It's I know not this fall, but next, we'll offer, you know, a presidential elections class and try to, you know, feed off of that, you know, interest and energy that surrounds, you know, the political process at that point. So it is a good time. There's a lot of discussion, and South Carolina is a lot of fun. You know, first in the South, it's a primary that matters. Again, being in Kentucky and Ohio, you know, the primaries outside of 2008, the primaries were a non-event.
Right.
So it's really fun to be in a state where the primary really is very meaningful. So it is a fun time. It'll be a really good topic of discussion. We do, you know, we use it a lot in our classes, and we have classes kind of based around, you know, what is going on around us. So it is something to look forward to, and it is a good way to recruit as well. You have people who, you know, are excited. It is an election, you know, big presidential election year. So they turn to political science, so it is a good time to kind of reel them in. I think there's three political scientists at Lander, and I think we've got a good program, and we've done a good job, you know, during those presidential years of kind of reeling people in and, you know, keeping them in political science, especially during presidential elections. So it is definitely an opportunity to recruit people to the major because, I mean, there's a lot of information, there's a lot of excitement about what is going on. So, you know, people get involved at that point and also want to study that, and we are more than willing to accommodate. So.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. Now, when we're talking about the politics of what is going on, one of the things that I think is going to be very interesting is that here we have the newest poll after the debate, and at this point it looks like Trump is somewhere around 22%. Ben Carson got a big boost out of this with 14, and then it kind of moves down the scale. But the thing that I am thinking here is all the political candidates that have been in politics forever are not faring as well. I mean, Scott Walker, who was the darling, he's dropped back here. Why do you think that there is so much excitement about non-political candidates?
I think, maybe in the Democratic Party, but I think there is a constituency in the Republican Party that is just, and I think the Republicans have done very well, their best when they're able to do this. It's just anti-Washington. And it's this idea, you know, you move away from these career politicians, and that Washington is broken, and that if you have an outsider like Carson, like a Trump, who, you know, could come in and, you know, maybe fix it and bring a fresh perspective. Contract with America, a lot of really big Republican movements have been based off of anti-Washington, anti-establishment, and I think that these candidates bring that.
But, you know, the Republicans took the House and the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen a big change up there since they got control of that.
No, and well, it is very hard to kind of change the book. And one of the more interesting things that this whole Obama trade deal, you know, is really interesting. The president going to the House Republicans and House Senate is his defenders to try to get this thing passed and fighting against the Democrats. So I was teasing one of my relatives who's a big Obama supporter. I said, you know, when did he change parties? But, you know, it, it, uh, it, it, that hasn't bode so well for, you know, for the Republican Senate and Republican House. There has been some movements against John Boehner and so on and so forth. Was it Ted Cruz was very upset with Mitch McConnell. In their defense, it is very, very difficult to really make big shifts, especially in Congress. But that has not bode well for the rank and file Republicans that had higher expectations when the Senate shifted. They wanted something more, not a big shift at this point. And in some cases, there's been more perhaps bipartisanship since the Republicans took the Senate in 2014. You could argue, than any time before. So. It's been interesting.
What do you think about the fact that Chuck Schumer, who is being groomed for the next head of the Senate, what do you think about the fact that he is going against the Iran deal?
There's been a lot of discussion about that, and there were a lot of people that really looked to Schumer to see, where his stance would be, and there was a lot of, I think, pressure on him, hoping that he would oppose it by many different constituencies, probably including Republicans. I think the thought was is that he would end up backing it, and he's come out against it.
Right.
There is a large Jewish population in New York, and there's a lot of concern about how this deal will affect Israel, and, if it does, in fact, really open up the Middle East and Iran to kind of this basically nuclear arms race on a regional scale. At some level, even though he's been a major backer of the president, he is being groomed to be the either majority or minority leader, depending how things go in 2016. It is really interesting how he's come out against it. And overall, it looks like the president is kind of losing this kind of the argument, if you will, to support this deal that he's made. It does not seem to be faring well in public opinion polls, doesn't seem to be doing very well in Congress, either the House or the Senate, and it doesn't seem to be improving at all, even though he has gone out and he's used very strong rhetoric, a lot stronger than he would usually use, to try to get people to support what he's done, and it there seems to be no movement. If there is any movement, it's in the opposite direction. So it's time will tell, as with anything in politics. But, things are not going well for the president.
If you were a betting person, would you think the deal was going to pass? From what you know right now, which is all you can go by, what you know right now.
I don't know that it will. The momentum seems to be against it. I'm a big believer in momentum in politics, and the momentum is really carrying this thing against the president. The president has come out very strongly. He's used a lot of strong language. He's trying to get people to support it. And,
you think he's gone too far in pushing for it?
I don't know if he's gone too far, but he's not winning the argument, it seems. The lack of support in Congress and the lack of support in the public opinion polls seem to indicate that he's not getting any traction. So
he went on vacation.
A consistency. It seems like
correlation.
It seems like it's whenever times get tough, it's like he's on vacation or golfing. So sometimes with John Boehner. That's been an interesting thing, and I don't think that has gone over well with many of the people who are kind of watching this. Like we're hitting the road again, and going on vacation. So although they've said that he's been making phone calls, but still,
he's on vacation. That's right. Everybody should get a vacation. Even you, Ann, should get a vacation, which I'm still waiting. But everybody should get a vacation, and it does your head good to get away and spend some time. But sometimes it seems like even Congress, the Senate, they take off time and they don't finish anything. And of course, when they come back, it'll be a week and they'll have to vote on it.
Yes. So, there's a lot of frustration, I think, on the part of the American people. And, it's if you make a deal with Iran, don't go on vacation right afterwards, Dan. So I don't think so.
That might be a good idea.
Maybe that could be it. I've made my deal. I've done it. I'm taking a break. So
yeah. he's done all he can do. He needs a break. Hey, if you're listening with us and you've got a comment here you'd like to make, give me a call, 229-7984, or you can go on our Facebook page, AnnEllerWCRSAM.radio. Either way, put a comment in there. Love to hear what you're thinking out there, or give us a call, 229-7984. We'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. We've been getting some questions in here this afternoon. And, you know, if you'd like to comment on Facebook, I've got my computer right up here, and I can take a comment right here on Facebook, Ann Eller, E-L-L-E-R. But one of the questions that came in that we thought we might discuss, just for interest's sake here this afternoon, Hillary. Somebody wants to know if a felon can be a president.
And we think we've decided that they cannot. But basically, I think that it would be just in bad taste to have a felony and run for president overall, or be accused of a felony. Or anyway, there's a lot of trouble in Hillary land right now. Some dark clouds approaching. It would seem. And the poll numbers have also indicated. Now, nationally, she's still up probably by 60 points, but in recent polling in New Hampshire, Bernie Sanders is now up.
And again, a socialist.
Yes.
A socialist is now.
He wants you to think of him as a Democrat now. But yes, he was a socialist from the massive state of Vermont, all three electoral votes. And you know, he's up now. And of course, now it helps. He's kind of maybe the hometown guy, because New Hampshire is right up there with Vermont. But, you know, this was supposed to be a cakewalk. And if you would have asked me a year ago what Bernie Sanders would have done against Hillary Clinton, I would have said nothing, absolutely nothing. He's up now in New Hampshire. And it's really critical to remember Iowa and New Hampshire are absolutely critical for a presidential run in the primary. Nobody has, you know, lost both of those states and ever, you know, become the nominee for either presidential party. So you have to win at least one of those or do well in order to continue on in that primary process. And if Bernie Sanders were to win in New Hampshire, that just gives him more legs further on down. So it's interesting. So, yeah, with this whole email, you know, It must be taking a toll, and there seems to be some concern that Hillary Clinton is not the presumptive nominee. This sounds eerily, you know, familiar. You know, 2008, you know, kind of she came out, and the old saying is you're always supposed to run like you're 10 points behind, and she's kind of run like she's been 20 points up, which by and large she has been, and more. But, you know, this is beginning to take its toll, and it's been a very cavalier attitude towards handling all of this. And you know, with Joe Biden thinking about jumping in on the race, you know, there are probably people like him that assumed that Hillary was going to be unbeatable and are now taking a second look. The Democrats, you know, originally were not going to do any debates, and now they've scheduled some debates. So, you know, there is some trouble there. And again,
well, wouldn't you like to know how Hillary's going to debate? Let's see. If I become the president, I'll give you an answer on that. But until then, I'm not giving you any answer. Kind of like the pipeline. I mean, I couldn't believe, you know, well, that's their deal. And if I become president, I'll give you an answer. Come on, Hillary, run the presidential campaign like a presidential campaign.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very cavalier attitude, and I don't know if she's been, you know, has some advisors around her that are just saying, you know, just kind of weather the storm, and this will all blow over, and you will continue to be the nominee. But it just doesn't seem to be working, and the trouble that was brewing is, you know, the storm around her continues to grow. More people are, you know, most notable being Joe Biden, are thinking about jumping in on the race. You know, something's got to give. You know, she's got to start fighting again as if, you know, that this was up for grabs. And I do think it is. You know, I don't know if Bernie Sanders will hold that lead in New Hampshire, but the fact that he's up at this point in that critical state, Hillary is still up in Iowa, you know, that is trouble. That spells big trouble. And if, I guess, Joe Biden any time now could, you know, announce either way whether he's jumping in. And if he does jump in, you know, I think there's Joe Biden, the people that would support Joe Biden, I think, are going to be people that, you know, might have otherwise supported Hillary. Joe Biden seems to be a little bit more moderate. You know, Bernie Sanders definitely has his own constituency, we'll say, within the Democratic Party, given that, you know, that he is basically an unabashed socialist.
Yes.
So, you know, I think that's going to pull more people from Hillary. I don't know how many, but it will pull from her. So,
I don't think she's going to be able. There is, I you know, there is a common thread out there that Hillary went ahead and is turning it over to the Justice Department because that should be more friendly than if the special investigative team of Trey Gowdy got a hold of it, and that maybe that the team will, the party there that is in power right now, the Democrats there in Washington, maybe they would protect her. But it doesn't sound to me like they are going to be. One of the stories that I heard that I thought was real interesting is that her server was in one of her barns. Now, I don't know if it was under some hay or what it was, but I heard it was in a barn. And I guess the idea of the FBI storming Hillary Land looking for this server would not have been very good.
And going to her barn.
Yeah.
It's kind of cavalier. But when you have a candidate and, you know, she is, to be very clear, she's guilty of nothing so far. But when people...
She's guilty of public opinion.
She is guilty. I mean, and that's what it goes into, the realm of public opinion. When people hear that, you know, a candidate had to turn over a server to the Justice Department, you know, it doesn't...
Brings a lot of questions.
It brings a lot of questions. You know, is this person going to be charged with a felony? You know, is this... I mean, is she going to be, you know, Richard Nixon, you know, is she going to get elected and then, you know, be impeached? And those are questions, especially when you have the Justice Department involved, when you have Trey Gowdy doing this investigation and continuously going out in the press saying that I'm being, you know, stonewalled, I'm not getting the information that I need. There has been also some allegations about, you know, some of Hillary Clinton's key, you know, associates in the State Department.
And what are they going to do? What are they going to do? Are they going to stand firm with Hillary, or are they going to say, I was ordered to do this, or I did this on my own? Which are they going to go with?
It depends. You have kind of that old prisoner's dilemma type thing, and it's like, you know, who's going to get the best deal, and are you willing to give up, you know, get in trouble, you know, for someone
and
else?
And how about her attorney having one of the thumb drives?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was in jeopardy with his own career there.
It's all of this looks bad, and perhaps
because it is bad.
Well, yes, true.
I'll say it, Chad. Even if you won't, I'll say it.
Trying to be a little more. But I mean, it does look really, really bad, and you know, it is bad, and really, what the public seems to be getting is kind of a cavalier attitude that, you know, that it's kind of above, you know, that she's above this and it's nothing to be worried about, but it is. So
it definitely is. And, you know, I want to take it back just a little bit, because I think this goes to a whole philosophy here. Now, some people have said because she is who she is she above the law and all this type of thing? But I want to take it back to even a level below that, because I think it goes back to good old simple ethics. And I think that the baby boomers have done a terrible job raising their children with a thought process of ethics, because we see this over and over in government and we don't do anything about it.
True. I think there, and this kind of goes back to what you said before, you know, why is Ben Carson doing well? Why is Donald Trump doing well? And there is kind of, again, maybe in both parties, this idea that the kind of the Washington elites have thumbed their nose one too many times at, you know, the John Q. Citizen, you know, the average Joe and average Jane. And, you know, there is some pushback. And maybe this is a good lesson that people do need to be careful and, you know, do craft their message and, you know, be aware that people are aware of what they're doing, and they do have to be careful because there is some pushback. And so I think that she is getting the pushback. It'll be very interesting in the coming weeks to see if anything changes, or, you know, if there's kind of this, you know, if she's kind of in an insulated area.
Well, she's been in a bubble. She hasn't let the media close to her. I mean, I think
literally a bubble.
What I'm talking about. Yeah.
There's pictures I saw recently, you know, that they, you know, the press zones and stuff like that.
She had them roped off in New Hampshire and everything. I mean, I really thought they should get some little of those stick horses, and they should have said, "We're ponying off someplace else if you're not going to talk to us, Hillary."
Yes. It is very odd, very surprising, and it's not indicative of someone who is really fighting to win a nomination. It seems kind of.
So what are you saying, Ted? Is she trying to keep her foundation, maybe a podium? Her foundation? Why is she doing this if she's not doing it to win?
It could. I mean, I think what has happened is, I mean, she was the presumptive candidate. Really, everybody was waiting to see whether or not she would jump in. She did jump in. Yeah, you had Bernie Sanders jump in. You have Maryland's former governor, O'Malley, step in. But, you know.
He screwed up royally when he said that black lives, white lives, all lives matter. And then he backed off of that and said, of course, just Black Lives Matter. I think he lost a lot of ground right there for the American public.
Not a very polished communication there, which is surprising. I mean, I'm sure he has staff, you know. That was kind of a very huge boondoggle for him, where he just, it was.
Where is he at? We haven't even heard from him lately. Has he gone home to study up on how to be a politician?
You would think. He was the former mayor of Baltimore and the governor of Maryland. So, again, it's kind of one of those instances where we would expect, you know, him to be a little more polished. But, yeah, he's really trailed off. But, I mean, really, you really didn't have much opposition to Hillary, and she was the presumptive candidate, and she has kind of since that time, almost very eerily similar to what happened in 2008, just kind of, it seems like, kind of thinking that she is above the fray, that is kind of an unstoppable movement, and that if she kind of waits all this stuff out, that it will simply go away. And I don't know.
Would you like to be a fly on the wall in some of their meetings?
It would be, you know, I'm wondering if some of her campaign staff are saying, you know, hey, we've got to do something about this. Or are they the ones that are, you know, creating the problem by saying, don't worry about it. This is all, you know, this is all stuff that will blow over. Everything will work out fine in the end.
Do you think it is?
It's tough to tell.
But you've been on political candidates, you know, you've been working with candidates and everything. What would you think? I mean, this is totally hypothetical. What would you think that is going on in her camp?
My guess is that you probably have some of her key advisors saying, you know, this will all blow over and, you know, everything will be fine. And to be fair, you know, Trump and Carson are doing better now. Next week, I mean, all of this is subject to change. And really, it's all a matter of timing. Who really gets hot right around the time, you know, Iowa has the caucus and New Hampshire votes? And really, it's about peaking at the right time. And maybe this does all blow over. And this is just kind of, you know, a bad time for the campaign for Hillary. And, you know, this stuff kind of goes away and the support comes back. You know, time will tell. But, you know, right now, you know, it's hemorrhaging support. Joe Biden could jump in, which I think will do more damage to her. O'Malley really doesn't have he's got one or two.
He's out.
We might as well declare him, out. So I think this is going to hurt her, and I don't think that the constituency that is supporting Bernie Sanders are Joe Biden people. So I don't know if this is going to blow over for her. So this is going to they probably
wouldn't
should.
You like to be able to look in her eyes and just say, Hillary, what's the truth? Wouldn't you just like to know deep down inside, what really is the truth? Because really, she is the person that knows.
I wouldn't mind consulting for her either.
You wouldn't mind consulting? Okay, right.
I'd be happy to provide some advice.
That's okay.
For the right price.
All right, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. We'll come back. I think we'll change over and hit on the Republicans for a while now. Hey, don't you go away. You got a question or a comment? Give us a call. 229-7984.
Does this make sense? We buy your gold, diamonds, jewelry, coins, sterling silver at the highest prices, paying extra for fine jewelry and quality, and we're always buying your diamonds and colored stones too. But we sell at the lowest prices, from diamonds to gemstone jewelry to sterling silver pieces and antique and estate jewelry. Always lowest prices for quality jewelry. See us today, Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. You got a question? Give us a call, 229-7984, 229-7984. I'm Ann Eller, and I am with political science professor at Lander University. Yes, they have a political science department. Not a big one, but you have one over there. And how long have you been at Lander?
This will be start of year 5. So I've got 4 years here in Greenwood.
Wow. Okay. So I think you enjoy working with your students. We've done some stuff on the air here where your students have had the opportunity to come on and talk about politics and everything. And there seems to be a good rapport between you and your students on politics, et cetera.
Yeah, I do try to build up a good relationship with my students. We have a lot of fun. I do really enjoy teaching a lot. And it's fun when you have students who are interested and passionate about the same things that you are. So it really makes my job easy. We have some very, very good students, and you've met some of them, and they're interested and passionate too. And many of them are still working in politics. So it's very exciting.
That's great. Now I wanted to switch back to the Republicans, and maybe we would cover somebody like Carly Fiorina. Carly had a great showing in the, they called it the happy hour debate.
The kids' table,
table. But, I think there was an advantage for being on that stage, even though it wasn't watched by 24 million people. If you stood out, you got a lot of attention.
And, it's interesting. Yeah, that whole subgroup, I guess, if you want to call it that, had an opportunity to kind of, stand out. And she really took that opportunity and she ran with it. Was it seen by 24 million people? No, I think it was somewhere near 5 or 6 million. But she really, I think her and Kasich were the two people who got the biggest bumps from this debate. And I think she's going to be moved up to the prime time, the adult table, if you will, for the next debate. So, there was some talk. I saw an article this morning in one of the big newspapers about, she really is good because she really can go against the whole idea of the Democrats have said, Republicans have the war on women. And she's a perfect kind of antidote, if you will, kind of against that.
Sure.
So she's a good person to have, a very smart person. It's interesting. One of my really good friends and I were talking about her and Trump, but really her, she ran for the U.S. Senate in California, and I think it was 2012, and Meg Whitman ran for governor. Two very smart, fairly moderate Republicans, probably almost anywhere else in the country would have done very well, but California just it just didn't happen.
Didn't take.
Did not take. Wasn't really even close. But I mean, two CEOs, a very accomplished, and women that ran, and but they it was California is a very tough environment for Republicans.
It is. But, I think one of the things about Carly that personally that I would like to see, I think she's got a great story. But I think a lot of her stuff is so measured, and she almost to me doesn't seem real. She is so scheduled on what she says. Now, I know that's good training, and I know that's good for a politician. But every once in a while, I'd like to see the human side.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, she has her moment now in the sun, and it's going to be very interesting to see what she does with it. And I wonder if she's really polished. She was the one, I think, that came out with the Demon Sheep ad several years ago that got great acclaim for being just a terrible advertisement. So I wonder if she has some people that are making her a bit too conservative out there. So,
human. You push this button, she says this. You push that button, she says this. If I get the opportunity, I'm going to find a button that hasn't been pushed, and I'm going to ask her that question and see if she goes to button push number three. I'm going to say, we've already heard that one. Now, what's your opinion on this?
Well, I mean, I guess what they say in the field is, she's on message.
Right.
She's
exactly.
Very good on message. It's very clear they've done their homework and given her
talking points,
a message to reply to. To certain questions,
question. Yep.
But at some level, you're right. People would like to hear,
something from the heart,
something from the gut, something from the heart that really speaks to people and kind of speaks to kind of the person she really is behind
right.
Staying on message. There is something to be said about staying on message, but
you can't get hurt.
Yeah, you can't get hurt. And then there's Donald Trump, who I think
goes perhaps, off message all the time.
I don't know.
Or does he have a message? That's the question.
I wonder who works communication for him. I bet they have no hair left, male or female, because they've probably pulled it out. Because he seems to kind of shoot from the hip, and I don't know if he's not stayed on message.
Yeah, he is not. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. We're going to hold this over for a few more minutes. One of the things that they've said about Donald, and one of his problems has been, is he hasn't had, he's been mad, right? Mad. He's hit that mad button, what everybody's mad about. But he hasn't really had the points on what he was going to do. And if I had one thing I could say about the debate is that he didn't have any, this is the plan, this is what we'll do. He's like, I'm a billionaire, I'm a good businessman, I can bring the jobs back, you're going to love it. Okay, end of discussion. I think he said that about 5-10 times, if he said it once.
You're going to love it, yeah. He does have that going for him. And what is it, the wall? He said, I'm going to make Mexico pay for it. And Mexico is going to pay 100% for this wall. Well,
how are you going to make him pay for it?
Now
he is coming out with some of these points that are starting to lay it out. But I do think going into the debate that if he had had a few more points, he would have fared better from the standpoint of, no, I'm not just a blowhard up here that's a magnificent business person, but I have plans, and here is one of them. And he would have maybe upstaged some of the others that were trying to put their plans out there.
Lacking some kind of depth and substance. There is something that still, there are a lot of people, I talked to some of my relatives and friends, that are intrigued because, he's come out and said, I'm going to fund my own campaign. I don't want lobbyists. I don't want the PACs. I'm a billionaire. I'm very happy to tell anybody. Multi-billionaire. He would definitely correct me. He'd correct us all. But, he has that, and he's saying I'm in nobody's pocket, and I owe no one any favors. And I think that again, we talked earlier about that the anti-establishment that resonates.
And yet, he knows how to put other people in his pocket.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
No, that's a big point,
Was, what was it that he discussed at the debate that was just I found very hilarious? Hillary Clinton did come to my wedding, and
yes.
I've contributed a whole lot to several of her causes, and so she had to come. So, it was.
Do you think he's a Republican? You think he's a conservative? Let's not. I don't even care about the title Republican. I care about, do you think he is conservative for the Republican Party? Is he a conservative? Does he fit their, will he fit their?
I think he does. Now, he has supported Democrats in the past. I thought he had supported Kerry in 2004, but I could be wrong about that. But, you know, he's in a...
I know many business people that support different ones because they, number one, don't know who's going to win at that moment, right? And number two, they want to make sure that they have access.
So, those are all very, very key things. It's, you know, well, if you want to contribute to a campaign, it's, unless you are, you know, a true believer, you want to give to the winner, especially when business is involved. So, yeah, he's definitely contributed, and that's been, you know, that's a business decision at that point, and not so much
not
a personal decision.
But is he conservative enough, is he Republican enough to be the Republican nominee for president?
Perhaps. You know, the people, I mean, he does grab a very conservative, constituency. There is a group of people, and I think that they tend to be more conservative. Maybe, you know, one of the groups I think that, and why he's gotten so many tiffs with Rand Paul is, I think that he pulled a lot of people from, you know, Rand Paul supporters that were initially probably going to support Rand Paul are now supporting Trump. And henceforth, they had a lot of, even in the debate, had some back and forths.
Was
it Donald Trump said, you know, Rand, I think you're having a rough night. So,
right.
You know, so Rand Paul is going after Trump because I think those are some of his supporters in that camp. So I do, you know, he does have a very conservative message on many different issues. And quite frankly, when he first, number one, I was surprised that he ran. And number two, you know, I was surprised, being a business person in New York, I thought he would be a bit more moderate than what he has come out. But, you know, he's come out, you know, very strongly on a lot of, you know, conservative issues. And he does have, clearly he is the front runner. The last polls I saw, he's up in Iowa and New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And again, no matter what the national polls say, if he wins those two or even one of them, you cannot say that he is not, you know, a front runner or that he could be the nominee anymore.
Sure.
Because again, that the, as my old professor used to say, the big mo, when that momentum gets going from Iowa and or New Hampshire, it is almost impossible to stop. And again,
well, the question is, will he run the table? Being from Atlantic City, will he run the table?
I don't know that he'll run the table. I would guess that he will lose in Iowa or New Hampshire. I don't think he'll run the table. But he's looking very strong at this point. And as much as many people, you know, as we try to kind of say, he's a flash in the pan, he's a blowhard. He is making inroads with the right people. He is doing well in the polls in Iowa and New Hampshire. And again, whenever you look at polls, the national polls are interesting, but you've got to know what's going on in Iowa and New Hampshire, and to a degree what's going on in South Carolina. Those are, you know, the big two, big three, and the momentum that begins there. And again, if you look back, two people in 2008, Rudy Giuliani was ahead in every national poll in the Republican side in 2008. He got zero, he didn't win any of the elections, of the primary elections. He got zero delegates. He bet it all on Florida. By the time Florida comes around, you know, as Jeb might be doing, it's over. There was already a moderate candidate who was basically the nominee. It was John McCain. So he was, you know, he was out. Hillary Clinton, again, 2008 was going to be the nominee. You know, this guy, Barack Obama, he's got some momentum. He comes along. You know, he was able to win in Iowa. He did not win in New Hampshire, but again, the rest is history. They were able to drag it out, and he ended up being the nominee. So again, Iowa and New Hampshire are absolutely critical, as is South Carolina to a degree, especially with Republicans. So he does have some staying power. He's got the money. He's got the name ID. He cannot just be tossed aside and just said, this guy's, you know, the polls, there was a poll came out recently, and, you know, he is the most loved and hated nominee of Republicans. He does have a constituency of people who really, really like him, but there are also some Republicans who really, really do not like him.
Like Rance Priebus.
He's definitely a constituency, he's definitely got a constituency, but he's, he's definitely there's definitely some people who really dislike him intensely, I think is the nicest way to put it.
Right.
But the people who the supporters, you know, if they're around in New Hampshire and Iowa, and if the support comes at the right moments, that momentum can be enough to push everybody aside. And again, he's up, and again, it doesn't take much to be up when you're in a field of 14 people, and he's got the staying power. He can outlast several of those other people. So I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. I don't know that he'll be the nominee, but you know he's lasted a long time and he's not.
He's
going
definitely
away. Going
to shape the conversation on whoever becomes the nominee, whether it is him or not. Okay, last question: would he take a third party?
I don't know. That's been there was a great cartoon that came out, you know, with him kind of, you know, holding a gun to an elephant's head and saying, you know, back off, or you know, he gets it type of deal. He definitely has the money, and he's definitely got the name ID. Again, I'm thinking back, and again, when I mentioned Ross Perot in my classes, people are like, "Who is this guy?" I remember, you know, we remember that in 1992, and that was really, really big.
Well, I think the question is, would he in the end, despite what he says, will he support because it's in the best interest of the country, or will he take it? I want to be president. I'm going to and. Everybody says you cannot split the party this way and win.
You never now. Does it make sense for him to run as a third party candidate? I would say no. Now, and I would definitely in full confidentiality or to kind of put it out there. Full disclosure, not confidentiality. I'm not a huge fan of third parties. And
right.
Again, they typically, you know, they don't do well. They take from one party or
sure,
the
that's
other.
That's why I'm asking you.
Typically.
Right.
Why would he do that? The man has money, like a Ross Perot. He has a very healthy ego. There's no debating that. And again, somebody with those money and ego, if he feels that he was slighted in this race and that he actually could win. And again, you know, if I were one of his advisors and you were making money, you just keep riding that gravy train. So, yeah, Donald, let's do this. Let's run for
third
party.
Party.
I'll be your advisor, and I'll stay on as your advisor. Let's shake things up and see how it goes. And, you know, I could see him, you know, I don't know if he'll do as well as Ross Perot, but he could. And my thought is, given especially the comments he's made at this point, the votes that he's going to pull from are Republican votes more likely than Democratic votes.
Sure.
So, you know, he could do it. He is this giant kind of, you know, wrecking ball in this whole, as he's been, you know, called in the press many times. You know, he does have the money and the staying power and the name ID to either win the Republican primary or go on and run a third party candidacy, because he's got the money and the ego to do it. That could be the ultimate demise.
Okay, but here's my thing. If he truly cares about our country, if he truly cares about bringing America back, that would have to be an epiphany moment where you sat there and said, yes, I could divide the vote, but could I win it? And that is what I hope that he will look at when and if that opportunity comes his way.
Ego will, well, Trump.
Ego, ego trumps everything else.
Ego trumps everything else. He could just, you know, he thinks, there's a lot of people who think that they are doing the best for the country and they're letting their ego guide them. I'm sure Donald is a very nice man, but, you know, he does have a healthy ego. And, I you know, with the right people pushing those buttons, you know, riding the gravy train, perhaps even, you know, for the money, you know, they could push him into it. And I think he's seems to me the type of person who could easily just fall for it and just go for it.
Okay. All right. You heard it right here on WCRS. We've talked through here a little bit, but I hope you found it an interesting and entertaining conversation here this afternoon. I've been here with Chad Kinsella. He is an assistant professor in the political sci- department over there at Lander. Listen, we'll have to have you back more often than not during the next year, because this is going to be fascinating stuff.
Oh, it is going to be very entertaining, if nothing else, entertaining. And again, I may end up eating several of the things I've said here today by the time, you know, if we come back around and, you know, right before South Carolina votes in the primary, it could be a whole new ball game, or I could be completely wrong. We'll see. So, and then we've got the presidential election in earnest. So there's a lot more. This is a fun time to be a political scientist.
Absolutely. That's going to do it for us. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.